When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Once you tap into that inner wisdom and you're able to really listen to your body, and the body carries the memories of everything you went through in your life, then all of a sudden you realize you always had all the answers. A little bit like Slumdog Millionaire. He comes on stage and he knows nothing. He's the dumbest kid around. No, everybody has all the knowledge and the study, but he has all the answers to all the questions. And we all are this kid who has no idea, who thinks he's completely lost and he has no way to win. And actually, oh my God, I actually have all the answers. And it's just having that ability of looking within and listening deeply to the wisdom of the body and the memory stored there. And if we can all tap into that, then really we're good. Really we're good. We can all win.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body, from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, I hope to explore some of my favorite topics, such as breathwork, cold exposure, authentic relating, letting go of your fears, and so much more. We're going to get started in a minute. So if you like the work that we do, and if you're interested in these topics specifically, then make sure you hit the subscribe button right now, because what it does is it does something to the algorithm and it helps more people come across our show as well as this particular episode. So make sure, especially if you're on your iPhone, make sure to hit subscribe, make sure to hit follow, and make sure you tell at least one of your friends about this particular episode, because I'm excited about my guest for today, who is Alexandra Chuk. And Alex's goal is to empower participants in the breathing cold experience to heal themselves with simple, safe, and free tools and techniques. After using these same tools and techniques to help himself recover from depression, he discovered his personal mission: positively impact the lives of others by enabling them to live their life to its fullest potential. And he says that when we change our relationship to our breath, we change our relationship with ourselves. If we change our relationship to ourselves, it allows us to step up in the world, have better relationships with others and with Mother Earth. So, welcome, Alex, to our show. Super excited to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for saying these nice words. I'm very honored to be here, very honored to connect with everyone. And those are really crazy times, so I hope we can support people on their journey to reconnect with themselves, really. So thank you for what you're doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not sure if there's some background noise that has started right now, but, you know, before our show, I said, you know, I just have a feeling that there's something that's going to happen. And like we're finding out, right, there's a lot of uncertainty, unpredictability that is happening around the world right now. And I'm glad that, you know, we're having this conversation at the moment. So I usually like to start every conversation from the very beginning, which is, where were you born and where did you grow up?
So I am a Français. I'm French. I raised and born in near Paris. I left France in my early 20s. I lived 6 years in India. I lived in Laos. And now I live in Bali, Indonesia, for almost 10 years. And yeah, that's it. I love connecting with people. I love people of those countries and received a lot from this journey. And I'm on now my path to just open my heart and support people and give back and just contribute in the way I can so that we can collectively build a better world. I come from an environmental background. I'm an environmentalist. I created an app showing you where you can refill your water bottle. Called Refill My Bottle. I created a community around sustainability, a booking website around sustainability, and many initiatives. And I realized that if we want to change the world, if we want to help people, it's not through lecturing, it's not through advice giving. If you look at Greta Thunberg and Greenpeace and the way we are trying to create change, which is usually around shaming people, around telling them what's wrong with them, the only problem with that is it doesn't work. And unfortunately, or fortunately, but the only way people can evolve is through them going through their own journey. I cannot tell you what's wrong with you. If I tell you everything that I believe is wrong with you, you're just going to disregard me and say, oh, come on, who are you to tell me how I should behave? And you're not going to listen to me. So the only way, if I want you to change, if I feel that there's something wrong with your behavior, is just holding the space for you to make that a realization. And it's, this is obvious when I take your example, but this is how we treat the world. This is how we treat each other. We just constantly point fingers and I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm going to show you how what should be. It just doesn't work. Even if you know exactly what's wrong, like waste problem and plastic issues and the way we treat animals, and it can go on forever, or treat each other. It's just the problem with humans is we just keep doing the same thing that we know over and over. We have no, at a global level, of awareness and ability to acknowledge that, okay, the way we've been doing things doesn't work, so maybe we should try to do things another way. And as Einstein said, we cannot solve a problem using tools that created the problem, aka you cannot use the brain for solving problems that were created by the brain. So we need to move to our heart, we need to move to our body. Because you are your body, we are our bodies. So I found that through these practices, one person at a time, in a very small and humble level, I can have a much bigger impact than when I was trying to create a global website and solve the problem of plastic bottles or things like that, where really I could sense that I was not making enough of a dent. But that's my journey.
That is very, very intriguing. And thanks for sharing that. It helps build some perspective of, the journey that you've taken. And it's very true. If you look around, a lot of people are, shaming each other and are basically telling people what to do. And if you look at people collectively, usually one solution does not work for all, right? And I feel that, to your point, what needs to be done more is just education and providing people the options, because deep down, people have the intelligence. People are intelligent to make a decision for themselves very subjectively and also by speaking to the right people and informing themselves. But unfortunately, like you put, especially Greta Thunberg, who I'm not a big fan of, is basically telling people, this is what you should do based on I don't know what, but this is what you should do. And so that was great observation. The other thing I wanted to ask you was, so you spent some time in India, 6 years, you said, right? So which part of India were you in, and what brought you to India in the first place?
So I lived in India. I lived in places you've never been. You're Indian. You've never been to Saharanpur, have you?
I heard about it. It's in UP, right?
Yes. So I spent most of my time in UP. So I was in Moradabad, Aligarh, Firozabad, Saharanpur. I was based in Delhi, and I was not having a spiritual life at all. I was I had my own business. I was making reproduction of French antiques. So I was taking antiques from Europe and then going to those places and making reproduction of them. I had an incredible time in India. I miss India every day. I really, really love Mother India. And there is some powerful magic happening when you're in India. And it's hard to describe, as you know, and it's hard to put words on what's going on there. But it's such a it's a cliche, but it's such a country of contrast. And it's just a place where you can just be yourself, and there is enough craziness that, you know, it's okay to be yourself. But yeah, I really, really love, I lived in, you know, Saharanpur. It's probably 2 or 3 million Muslim people and me. So I was living there, going to the mosque, and I'm not Muslim, but, you know, I loved living in a Muslim environment where it's not stigmatized. You know, I come from a country in France where it's a big topic, and, you know, it's a topic talking about religion and Islam from a non-Islamic perspective is always a hot topic and you stay away. But living in a place where, okay, this is us, this is our life, and you're just joining there was really nice. And I got to do some really crazy things. You know, I was asked to help the owner of a factory I was living choose a bride for his son, and being part of that world also, and just being immersed in another planet was really, I was 23. So for me, it was a really wonderful, humbling experience. And really what I got from India is to be humble. You know, I come from the best business school, being French, you know, arrogance is kind of in my blood at that stage when I arrived in India. And I arrived full of confidence and trust that I knew better. I'm going to show you how things are done. You've done this the same way for generations, but you are all wrong. I'm 23 and I'm right. And it transformed me completely because, you know, as the British experience, you don't change India, and they've tried hard. So being confronted and learning to be humble is probably an important part of growing up. And I'm very grateful that I went through that really, of course, confronting and challenging time for a young adult, but it shaped me as who I am today. And I love, you know, this movie Slumdog Millionaire, because we're all the same. I think that's the metaphor, is at the end, you have all the answers you need. If you look back at your journey and every step of your journey, you think you know nothing, but everything you picked up in every moment of your life kind of give you all the answers you need, and you don't need anything else. And that's really the message of Slumdog Millionaire. You've got all the answers you need. And if you're able to tap in every part of your journey and how maybe challenging it was at times or confronting it was, maybe those are the clues you need for this, you know, holy grail that you're going, the $1 million challenge that you're going for. For me, it's really that. I'm at a stage where I really put together the pieces of the puzzle. And it's not like going back to my spiritual journey and the trainings I've done. And this is almost irrelevant. It's more the life journey, like in the movie. It's a life journey that we all went through. And when you really go back, says, okay, what can I take from that experience? No, regardless of what that experience was, you realize that there is so much wisdom in life. And when you are truly listening, and breath work, if we want to move towards talking about breath work, is the art of listening, is nothing else. You know, I think people are lost too much in techniques and tools and things that are very mental about what the breath is about and scientific, and I'm all about that. But if you look beyond the techniques and the discussion on one method or another, it's all the art of listening. How can I listen better? And once you tap into that inner wisdom and you're able to really listen to your body, and the body carries the memories of everything you went through in your life, then all of a sudden you realize you always had all the answers. A little bit like Slumdog Millionaire. He comes on stage and he knows nothing. He's the dumbest kid around. No, everybody has all the knowledge and the study, but he has all the answers to all the questions. And we all are this kid who has no idea, who thinks he's completely lost and he has no way to win. And actually, oh my God, I actually have all the answers. And it's just having that ability of looking within and listening deeply to the wisdom of the body and the memory stored there. And if we can all tap into that, then really we're good. Really we're good. We can all win.
That's very, very true. I like that you put it that way, because breathwork can be both scientific and deeply spiritual as well, right? And breathwork does have so many evidence-based, scientifically backed benefits in terms of how it affects our physiology, our neurology, our emotions, and all these things that can be measured, so to speak. But then it also has this very subjective spiritual benefits that one can only evaluate individually. And like you put, oftentimes, you know, our mind is chattering so much that we don't pay attention to the signs and synchronicities and the messages that the universe is trying to pass on to us. And so if we just, you know, lay still through breath work, through meditation, or even through cold exposure, which I love, then we can really get those messages. And maybe we get a message once and that's great. But sometimes you have a message that keeps recurring. Maybe it's when we're in our awakened state, or maybe through dreams. That's when you know what? Maybe the universe is trying to point me in a certain direction. And like Steve Jobs put, right? He says that sometimes you do like these odd jobs, or you may work in company A and then you do something different. We feel that it's all disparate and disconnected, but then we only can look back and then, you know, we can connect all the dots. And like you put, maybe we have all the answers already, and we just need to, you know, listen to what our body is trying to tell us and look for the answers within. So I find that really, really fascinating. And maybe if you can tell us, like, you know, what drew you to breath work? You know, were you doing it for a long time before and then you sort of wanted to go deeper into it? Or was there a healing journey, a healing crisis, so to speak, on your path? What was it like for you?
How did it all start? How did I start with breath work? It's a really good story, man. So I'd never done any spiritual work. I was doing yoga, but really just asanas for the fitness practice. I'm not religious. I didn't believe in anything, didn't believe in even energy. I was always jealous of religious people because I felt they had something to hang out to. People who were spiritual and all the hippies, I was kind of judgmental towards them, saying, oh, this is just a persona that people are taking. I didn't truly believe it. I didn't resonate with it. For me, I'm a rational person. I'm science-based. I need to understand things. This is completely something that was not accessible to me. And I was going through a tough separation with the mother of my kids, and I didn't want to separate. And the therapist was trying to save our relationship. And she asked me to express my emotions, and I had no access to that. So after a few sessions where she wasn't going anywhere with me, I wasn't releasing, I wasn't crying, I wasn't angry, it was nothing coming up from me, she took me to a breathwork session. And as you do, it's a hidden secret villa in Ubud. And I arrived there, a bunch of hippies, 20 hippies, and I'm in a shirt and pants and shoes, and I don't belong there. And they all start to move and dance, and the facilitator came back from Peru, and there are a lot of crystals and feathers, and I just don't feel this is my place. And then after a while, she instructs everyone to lay on yoga mats and on mattresses, and I was really reluctant, and I realized I'm stuck there for 3 hours, and I was really pissed at my psychotherapist who was also there with me. And a few minutes into, people start breathing with a breath of bliss. So it's connected to breath. So in and out through the mouth, connecting the inhale, and we exhale in a regular flow. And we can talk about the science behind it if people are interested. Happily, I studied it all now. But basically, after a few minutes, a girl not far from me started masturbating, moaning, and going for it. And I raised on my elbows and I was shocked. I said, oh my God, this doesn't exist in reality. You know, you see that in porn movies, but that's about it. It's not possible. And no one else cared. The girls were drumming and using feathers and no one cared. And I spent about 10 minutes not understanding what was going on. I was not excited. I was just not understanding. And then I got over it and I decided, okay, let's get something from it. And I took one breath. And I promise you, it took me one breath to get what we could call a download, for a better word. All of a sudden, I had clarity on what was wrong with my relationship with my parents. I was running a failing business and I knew all of a sudden why and how. I had, of course, failed relationships with my partner, but also with my kids. I had no relationship with myself. And what was insane is someone who is completely non-believer, very resistant, educated in a very rational environment, etc., etc., all of a sudden, everything lifted in one breath. That's all it took. I released for an hour and a half. like never before in my life. And when the facilitator, as we were sitting in the circle, asked if anyone wanted to grab the, at the time, what I thought was a ridiculous heart-shaped pink crystal in the middle, which was a talking stick, kind of. And she asked, who wants to share? I grabbed it and sobbing and struggling to find the words, I shared, I'm changing everything. That's all I could say. I put the crystal back and I never turned back. I couldn't save my relationship. It was long gone, but I changed everything else. I decided if someone like me can have such an experience with one breath, man, this is the answer. This is such a powerful practice that I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice but to dedicate my life to helping people experience some kind of self-connection the way I did that day. And again, the fact that I'm the normal Joe, that I'm not coming from, you know, any culture, any background, and any, you know, that was for me the most powerful part. It's like, I'm just everyday guy. And after that, that for me was the moment where I said, okay, if everybody can do this, absolutely everybody, there's not one soul on earth that cannot experience what I experienced. And for people to understand what happened, for 10 minutes, I was present. When do you, you're a meditator, when can you sustain 10 minutes out of your head, 10 minutes of pure connection to your heart? It's really hard. It takes years and years in practice to reach to a point where you sustain 10 minutes of getting up. And I did it against my own will because of the trigger of the girl next to me. But really what happened is the idea that for 10 minutes, I was fully centered, fully connected. And that's all my body and my brain needed to have the space to get this kind of download. And it's really why meditation is the answer, everyone. And breath work, ice bath, are tools that get you to a deep state of meditation. But really, that's all they are for me. They are prep work for meditation. The same way the goal of yoga is shavasana. The goal of yoga is when you're ending. That's the goal of yoga, is to help you center. You should not miss on that part. And I really insist that for everyone who is facilitating breath work out there, do not underestimate the importance of the nothingness that happens after a session. And very often you will join sessions where people finish the session and then they bring people back and then, okay, let's share. Who wants to share? I feel this is a mistake. I feel it's really important to, and you cannot give enough time. So be relaxed. You cannot give enough time. So give as much time, because this is where the magic happens. It's always in the time in between, and it's always the time after, because that's where we really integrate whatever is going on. And if we are just staying in the space that is being held, then we don't have space. Someone else is holding that space for me. But the time where you're just holding the space for yourself, when there is no more instruction, where is no more guidance, there is no more music, everything stopped, this is where really magic happens, because you are now empowered, you're really taking care of yourself. So yeah, that's in a nutshell my little initiation with the breath.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. It's very profound. And I'm sure that our listeners who are listening right now or maybe watching a stream are able to relate as well. It's so amazing. You know, like some people historically have believed that heaven and hell are two separate places, that, you know, you live your life and then you go to heaven. But if you ask somebody else, maybe somebody who is a Hindu or maybe a Buddhist, maybe a monk or maybe, you know, a sage, they would tell you that heaven and hell are not different places, but they're just here. they're states that one can experience or embody. And like you were in a metaphorical hell before, because, you know, you had a different relationship with yourself. And yet after the breathwork session, after the meditation, still the same person by all means, and you were still in the same surroundings, but you experienced your own version of heaven. And you decided that, you know, things are going to change. And that transformation was awesome. And I also fully agree with what you put or what you said, is that the last phase is the most important and beneficial, right? Because, you know, I do breathwork sessions myself and most of them online. And initially, you know, I would, you know, finish the breathwork journey and then give people like maybe 2 to 3 minutes. And then I would say, you know, now you can wiggle your fingers, you know, wiggle your toes and wake up and let's start sharing. Then what I decided to do was give people their own time, you know, give them 10 minutes, 15 minutes, allow them to really immerse themselves in their bliss and be in Shavasana. And then once we, you know, wake up, that's when people really feel the transformation, right? Because they've gone through the movements, they've gone through the mantras, they've gone through the breath work, and now they get to really get those downloads, deep, full body relaxation, and feel one with themselves. So love what is coming through in this conversation. You know, from your experience, what is happening during a breath work journey? You know, and you can take it wherever you want, but you know, what's really happening when a person experiences a breathwork journey?
So what's happening in a breathwork journey? So first of all, there are many breathwork journey types. You know, you've got rebirthing, holotropic breathwork, Wim Hof. So in a breathwork journey, you can breathe through the mouth, you can breathe through the nose, you can have Kumbhaka in between, some breath holds. So there's a lot of variations that can get you to different places. And maybe at this point I can share a little bit for people who are not that much into breathwork, some very fundamentals about what's going on. Because I find that often when we are getting people on breathwork journeys, breath journeys, we forget to mention that often what we are facilitating is not appropriate breathing. And it's important for people who are, some people join breathwork with the intention of breathing better. And that's not what's happening in a breathwork journey. So the way to breathe correctly from a physiological perspective is to breathe from the diaphragm, using the nose breathing, and using the maximum capacity of your lungs. The yogi says you're born with a set number of breath. So it's important to understand that the way to breathe is taking long breaths, slow breath, deep breath. And then we can consciously decide to breathe differently, with an intention, but it's not the appropriate way to breathe. Reason being, it's many benefits, but the nose, when you breathe through the nose, you have hair in the nose that are filtering bacteria, viruses. So if you are breathing in through the nose, all those get stuck and get filtered. When you exhale through the nose, they get cleared. So when you breathe through the inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth, the bacteria are stuck in the nose. So exhaling, people always ask me, so sometimes I hear inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth. Well, you need to understand that from a filtering perspective, you're missing, you're not allowing this aspect to be processed to work fully. So it's important to breathe in and out through the nose. It's also, the nose will be more related to the part of the nervous system that is calming, the parasympathetic nervous system. So if you're aiming at a calming state, you want to breathe slow, long, deep through the nose. So regulation of the nervous system. When you breathe through the mouth, you will have no filtration. You have a bigger amount of air in and out. And, you know, if you're outside, it's cold and it's freezing cold, and you breathe through the mouth for 5 minutes, you're going to get a cold, because you bring the air that you bring into your lungs is way too cold, cannot be heated. The nose is a heat center as well, and it's a heat exchange center. So there is also a gas called nitric oxide that is produced only through the nose and improves vasodilatation, which is important for the blood to be carried from your lungs to your organs. It's not about getting the oxygen in the lungs. Well, from there, it needs to move to the rest of the body. And for that, you need the veins to be enough open. You need the CO2 that is carrying the oxygen to the hemoglobin with the called Bohr effect. So there is a lot about functional breathing that needs to be said, I believe, in breath work as well, because a lot of people, what they need is everyday breathing. And it's very important. And my approach and my journey, I really insist on my students. I teach, I do facilitator trainings. I really insist that they talk about functional breathing. Now, that being said, you don't release emotions through the nose. So when you are crying, it's like that. So it's really through, when you're making love, it's through the mouth. So emotions are going through the mouth. So if you want to release emotions now consciously, you can also breathe through the mouth now. But see the difference? Now we are doing it with the intention. So when you are going through a breath journey, what you are, let's say open mouth breathing, what I'm doing is I'm releasing a lot of CO2. The CO2 is the carrier that helps bind the oxygen to the hemoglobin. So the oxygenation of the body depends on your CO2 level. The higher the CO2 level in the body, the better the oxygenation of the body. The goal is not the oxygen. Don't care about the oxygen. It's your CO2 that is gold. It's not a waste gas. So when you are exhaling forcefully, or it's called superventilation, so it's extra power of exhale, you are lowering your CO2 level. And all of a sudden, there is less oxygen being distributed. That's why people will have a tingling sensation. They will have headache. They will be cold. They will be hot. There will be some kind of modification in the state of the body, because all of a sudden, you are having less oxygen, including the brain. So now I have less oxygen heading to the brain. And the brain has to decide who gets the oxygen. Well, we need to provide oxygen to the limbic system, so limbic brain, so we can keep functioning. So the brain is deciding to shut down access to the front part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, space of consciousness and unconsciousness, and also controlling of our emotions. And inhibition center, which doesn't develop in kids initially. That's why kids can scream, cry, are much more in touch with their emotions, where adults will suppress them, where it's not appropriate to cry right now, because, you know, this is not something that I was told is okay. Don't cry. Be a good boy. Good, good girl. So I am not going to let go of my emotions because I was raised thinking this is not appropriate. Now, when you do this breathing, you shut down that part of the brain. That's why people get to release much more, because they don't care anymore. They don't have access to that. So they have access to their emotions all of a sudden. So from a physiological perspective, that's what's happening when we do this connected breath. Now, you sustain that for an hour, 2 hours in, you know, rebirthing or holotropic, then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of emotions can come up. That's one. Number two, what we need is space and time. And our mind is blocking us from having space and time, because our mind wants us safe. And safe is familiar. And you are happy with your story. You're happy with your persona, with the story you've been telling yourself. This is who I am. I'm from India. I'm a Canadian from Indian origin. I'm a male. I'm a father. All the things that define your avatar, all your stories, your mind is happy with that. It's comfortable. And your mind is freaking out for you to discover who you are when you remove all these stories, because, you know, Indians behave like that. Canadians are like that. French are like that. We are the product of our culture. We're product of our education, our story, our environment. And this define who we are or who we think we are. This is not who we are. Those are conditioning coming from different perspectives. This is how men behave. This is how Indians behave, etc., etc. And when you are breathing, you are creating space. When you're meditating, if you have access to deep meditation, you are creating space. And when you are able to create space and time, all of a sudden, you're accessing the deepest part of yourself. You're able to tap somehow to the source. Who am I when I'm not the product of my education, of my culture and all that? And this is what's going on in a breath journey. And this is a scary place to explore because, you know, your mind is protecting you from all that because you don't know what you're going to discover. And that's something that could be confronting. That's something that could be relieving traumas, for instance. So this is something that could be extremely confronting in many ways. And I often say that through the breath, ice baths, and other mindful practices, you really get to discover one layer at a time who you are not. And who you are not is who you are. So often, you don't have to figure out who am I, but you need to figure out who you're not. And that's much easier exploration to be, because you get to go one lifetime. Okay, let's explore who am I if I'm not a man? Okay, and I can put my intention and my focus on that. Who am I if I'm not a father, etc., etc. And by removing those layers of avatars, constructions, a friend of mine calling the theater, your own theater, then all of a sudden you get to really tap into the source. And for a lack of a better word, it's an incredible journey. And that's why it's so powerful.
That is amazing. And thanks for sharing that. Now, me personally, you know, when I do my breathwork sessions, I normally breathe in through the nose and breathe out through the mouth. But what you're saying makes sense. And if you breathe in and out through the mouth, at least during the breathwork journey, that you're able to tap more into your emotions. And that's what I'm going to try out next time. Yeah. Would that be accurate in saying that?
You know, it's very interesting because we are taught to follow whatever we've learned. And whether you have it because you read it in an ancestral yoga book, you take it a training and you've got someone you respect who's calling himself a teacher and he's come up with a method. So my invitation for everyone who's listening is to let go of teachers and let go of belief that, okay, I had someone like me telling you how to do, that's the same story. And really let go of all of that and explore. And that's really the best thing we can all do is explore, because there is so much magic in everywhere. And the beauty of the breath is there is little science yet. And it's absolutely magical to explore all aspects of it. I'm saying it's nice to use the same pipes from a physiological perspective, but we are much more than just the shell. And if we want to access the under layers, an emotional layer, then, you know, there is yin and yang channels going through the bodies, you know, which part is in the nose, which part is in the hands, in the mouth. There's, you know, you can tap into, I really invite people to explore pranayama, because it's really interesting to understand not only the different chakras as you are sharing, but also the different locks that we have in our bodies and when we can really move energy and tap into that energy. So you can do much more than just playing with the breath. You can, once you play with the breath, you can really breathe into different parts of the body. So you heal people tearing. I healed myself breathing in my shoulder. So there is so much inner wisdom in our bodies. And the breath is really the missing link, and it gets us to tap into that. But be playful with it. Don't be attached to anything that you believe about it. Don't be attached, but just play with it and explore. Give you an example, and some people who would be watching are my followers, and I would always, I learned with Wim, so I did, in Wim Hof, they say, belly, chest, head. So it's this full body breath. But at the same time, when you breathe through the belly, this is where you also, when I breathe through my belly, this is also where I store my anger, my frustration, all these emotions that you suppress. And when you cry, when you release, it's really upper chest. So now I'm exploring journeys where I just breathe through the upper chest and having a shallow, faster, connected breath through the upper chest. And really play with it. Play with it and see whether, and maybe set your intention. Say, you know what? You had COVID and you need to get your lungs to improve your lung capacity, because the size of your lungs is related to longevity. So, okay, you're going to go for deep, long, slow, deep breath and really get those lungs working. But maybe you are angry at someone. Maybe you have some frustration that needs to come out. Maybe there is something there that, I got triggered by this person. I would like to explore why I'm triggered. I would invite for a shallow upper chest breathing session. I think the key there with the breath, you can breathe yourself into the state you want to be. And I think the key word here is intention. Breathe with an intention. Very often people will go and say, I'm open. I will breathe and see what happens. Well, if you don't know where you're going, you're not going to go there. Or it's harder to get there. So instead of doing that, what if you reflect on, okay, where am I stuck in my life? Where do I want a bit of clarity in my life? Where do I, maybe I have a decision to make. Maybe there's something that you need clarity on. Maybe you got triggered by someone or something and you want to, and just start there and come with an inquiry. And when you ask questions to the body, you usually get the answers from the breath. But if you don't ask questions, it's harder to find answers. And it is amazing sometimes to come and be completely open and say, but I would say maybe it's a little bit harder for the body to provide you the answers. So yeah, it's nice to journal. It's nice to have a space where you can just really, you know, have a bit of self-reflection. What did I do wrong today? What would I change tomorrow? And have those moments of introspection. And the breath is now a tool that gets you to actually explore and find answers. Yeah, I said it's the art of listening. You listen to the body. And when you listen, when you really truly listen, then you get all the answers.
Love that. And I'm sure people listening right now are invited to introduce some play, experiment, and see for themselves what their experience is, which is what I'm going to do as well. And I also love the fact that you spoke about, you know, setting the intention before, right, going into a journey or before doing a breathwork session, so that, you know, everything that you do, especially your breathing, is more intentional. And would you say that because when somebody is, you know, in this experience, especially if you're new to breathwork, that it's a vulnerable space? And so you need to know that you can trust the people who are around you, right? What are your thoughts around that? Because at least when it comes to, you know, plant medicine, they talk about set and setting. And set is what you bring into the whole equation, you know, your thoughts, your intentions, you know, your past. Whereas setting is the social environment, which can play such a huge role, right? Especially maybe the person who is holding space for you, or also the people around you that are breathing along with you. So that could be, would you say that's a very vulnerable space to be in? Because so much is coming through you. And if you're not feeling that comfortable, yes, you are pushing beyond your comfort zone. But if you're not comfortable in that environment, maybe you don't have the ideal outcome you're looking for. What are your thoughts around that?
Wonderful question. Wonderful question about safety and connecting to the environment around you. We are animals. We're animals. We have much more not evolved from being caveman, cavewoman. And at all time, as an animal, you're assessing whether you're safe or not. So you're checking your environment, the different sounds. And in order to do this inner work, you need to feel safe. You're going to be extremely vulnerable. I would say to facilitator that I train, almost all you need is to create a safe space. It doesn't matter if you have the knowledge and people and you know what you're talking about. You need people to feel safe. And if you have the ability to create safety for the people that you work with, then everything, the magic can happen. And there is a recipe for safety. So you need to apply this. The first is vulnerability. You know, when very often I join sessions where the facilitator thinks he's a teacher and he puts himself above the students. And that's a recipe for catastrophe for me. Because if I'm focused on you, I'm not going to focus on myself. If I think, oh my God, I would love to look like him, I would be as wise as her, then I'm not focused on myself. So it's very important that as a facilitator, I say, embody vulnerability, because if I start to be vulnerable, it's human, this is how it will work, you will allow yourself to be vulnerable as well. So if I want people to be vulnerable, I need to embody that myself. You need to still be able to hold the space. So there is some, you know, control to be done. But it's very important that you are able to really tap into your heart and really share what's going on. And I've shared extremely vulnerable things in my sessions, especially when I feel that people are closed. So if I have a group of bodybuilders that are protecting with all those muscles, what's going on, you know, alpha male, then I will be extra vulnerable. I will go the opposite way, because I will not try to dominate them being even more masculine. That's not going to work. So I would say you need to know the masculine and be in the feminine. And that's having the knowledge, the sign. You can ask me any question. There's nothing you cannot ask me, but I don't need to talk about it. I know the masculine I have. I can go there, but I will be holding the space in love, in care, in compassion. So that's for you as a facilitator. I facilitate something that you don't see. For me, that's why I do it. I don't see enough in all the other modalities that are out there. And that's my specificity is authentic relating. And that's where you tap in what you mentioned about the connection with others. I spend a lot of time, I would say equal amount of time between the different sections, but getting people to connect with each other deeply, authentically, vulnerably. Because I feel that once you have that connection with others in the group, then your body can relax. Oh my God, because you arrive, remember your condition. Oh my God, this guy with all the tattoos, oh la la, this guy, he's like that. This girl, oh my God, I know everything about her life because the way she dress. And you have already, your story is run about everyone in the room. And once you connect with people, you realize that's just stories, that everyone is protecting themselves the way they can. And this is not who they are. And when you are people getting people to share truly what's going on by asking really vulnerable questions, and then adding the reflection. So authentic relating, an example would be what I think you think about me is. So I would say, you know, so now I'm going to tell you what I think you think about me. Now I'm having an idea of you, the image that I'm projecting, and I'm going to test what I think. And then after I say that, you're going to be able to say, you know what, Alex, spot on or not at all. And ranking it 1 to 5. And then I'll ask you, well, tell me more. So now you're going to tell me on something that I find vulnerable about me, how I am actually perceived. So I'm going to have a really specific information of how I'm perceived by you instead of projecting how you perceive me. Yeah. So by having all those exchange, and that can be a 1 minute exchange, doesn't have to be long, just 1 minute. You know, but just having sometimes a few minutes of interaction with a few people in the room, I do it when I have had sometimes large crowds before COVID, you get people to really connect with the people around them. And all of a sudden they feel safe. I call my tribe the murmuration. Murmuration, those are people who have trained with me, I call it the murmuration. Murmuration is a group of birds that walk, you see in the sky, and they create these incredible shapes. But each bird is only communicating with 5 or 6 birds. And then each bird doing that, they are able to move together. I actually believe in murmuration for humans. As long as you are connecting with 5, 6 people authentically and deeply around you and creating that sense of deep connection, then all of a sudden this will have ripple effects. So instead of trying to have huge impact in the world, reaching millions, just try to be a good human and connect and be authentic and vulnerable. And this will be the same going on around. I really believe in murmurations as a way of operating for humans. And we, of course, we know that we have so much to learn from indigenous populations and animal world. And it is how it operates indigenous populations around the world and also in the animal kingdom. So if we listen to how the elders have been doing things, if we listen to how animals behave, and we honor that we are animals and we are not that evolved with our iPhones and our AI, then we realize that, you know, we can learn something along the way, not from the future, but from the past. And once you have that safety in the facilitator, safety in your peers, then you can feel safe in your body and then you can go within. But it's about creating safety in your environment. And sometimes it's just closing your eyes and breathing and feeling into it. Say, okay, how do I feel right now? Ooh, I don't like that noise. And you know, let's say there is noise of construction. I'm going to breathe. And just acknowledging that there is noise and feeling and breathing into it and allowing, says, okay, then it's already okay now. It's already okay. And maybe you've got examples, and we all have examples where we feel really vulnerable and very not safe. And then let's say you're jealous about your boyfriend and you just voice it to the person. And the fact that you're able to voice it, it disappears. And it says, okay, now I actually feel much better. So sometimes just with some tools of communication and authentic relating, we're able to create that safety without changing the environment. There is still the same noise. There is still that issue with the other girl. But I was able to voice it, and that allowed me, regardless of the reaction from the other person, to find safety in my body, just being vulnerable. So that's my recipe.
That is some great ideas, and thanks for sharing that with me. It makes total sense that if you are going to spend the next 2 or 3 hours in an environment with people who are most likely strangers, then by being able to have some structure to encourage conversation, vulnerable conversation, will help break down some of those preconceived notions that we're making subconsciously. And if we realize, oh, that person has this story, or that person is going through a divorce, or that person is having some, you know, health challenge, which I didn't even know, somewhere down the line, we are able to relate to them as well. And so once we go into that breathwork journey, we're not going as strangers, we are going as one tribe, one community that in some way or the other is trying to figure out life, right? Nobody has all of it figured out, but then I see where these conversations can really help, you know, like just add some level of trust, add some level of bonding, and then, you know, breathing together. It makes so much sense, because if you look at the origins of the words conspire, it is to breathe together, right? Conspiracy then would be when people come together and breathe. And so I love the ideas that you are sharing. And so, Alex, what are your thoughts on plant medicine, right? Because in research and evidence is finding that certain plant medicines, maybe more, have, you know, influence the same parts of the brain. When it comes to maybe the default mode network, they are having the similar effects, if you look at psilocybin as well, like breath work. So what are your thoughts around usage of plant medicine? Do you think breath work is an alternative to plant medicine, or do you think plant medicine is a complement or a supplement to a breath work practice? What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you. Great question on plant medicine and medicine in general. Before I answer that, I just want to share another little tip. When you're asking all those questions, I close my eyes and I take long, deep breath, slow breath through the nose. Because when I talk, and I talk a lot now, I'm breathing through my mouth the whole time. And this is activating my sympathetic nervous system. So I'm conscious of it. So whenever I can, I actually take the space to go for 5 seconds inhale, 5 seconds exhale, and kind of rebalance my nervous system so I can leave our exchange centered and not needing to be feeling completely depleted. And I think it's important for whatever you do for people to really acknowledge as, okay, I'm in sympathetic activity for whatever you do. Let's honor it with parasympathetic. And that allows people to, you know, maintain their energy level throughout the day rather than crashing, being able to come back using, you know, sugar or naps to rebalance it. So this, I just wanted to plug that in because I think that could be really useful for a lot of people. That being said, you can also speak, but you need to take pauses and rebalance it sometimes with breathing through the nose. It's not that easy. Now, when LSD was created, it was a pharmaceutical drug created by the laboratory Sandoz. The founders of LSD wanted to know about the effect. When they realized it had some effect on the brain, on the senses, and people could access different part of the subconscious, so they brought it to India. And maybe you know that story where they gave one of those babas who had meditated for 20 years, and they gave him one pill of LSD, and was one of the gurus, probably in Rishikesh up there, and nothing happened. And 20 minutes later, they gave him another one. And then he said another 20 minutes later, this sentence, which it summarized my belief on plant medicine. He said, "It's great for beginners." And I think that's it. I think when you are disconnected and you need to calm down, you need to be able to tap to go within, and you're not able to access it because it's too hard, it's too deep, there is so much in the muscles, tensions in the muscles, too many conditioning, then of course the support of substances, medicines, plant medicines, whatever you want to call it, is wonderful and is incredible and get you to tap into inner wisdom. But I would say it's great to know where you can go and to tap into that. But I think if you have the ability to microdose every day with, have a routine that gets you to microdose and then operate it and tap into it and have control over it and direct it so you can be in control of where it's going, it's wonderful. So, you know, I think it's important with all those to just let people go on their own journey and explore rather than be too directive. I really like the idea of exploring and making your own journey. But really, the breath and those breath journeys and those breath holds and long breath holds gets you to the same place. And on the tools of contraction of different parts of the body, like the chute that is documented by Dr. Joe Dispenza, for instance, that gets you to release DMT because DMT gets released in the pineal gland. And if you react to it when you take it in plant medicines, it's because you have it within. And how do you release DMT is documented. You can project spinal fluid, you know, as people who are contracting the muscle between their genital and their anus, perineum, and then moving energy up called Kundalini. It's that spinal fluid. And then you can contract your abs, your glutes, your lower back, and really keep moving it up. Tongue as the roof of the mouth, eyes up, and you really keep going up. Then you really have a physical tapping on the pineal gland that will release DMT. So you can have a DMT breath. And it's kind of mechanical. So you can really, it's not like you, all you need is to really be able to be in that state where you can really shoot that energy up. And at the same time, you release tensions, emotions that are stored in the lower chakras, because that's where we store it. And it's cool when it's, okay, I can do it on demand. And it's been measured that the resting heart rate of people doing, you know, a few rounds, I modified a bit, but of, let's say, the Wim Hof method, their resting heart rate gets lower than after the same amount of time doing meditation. So you meditate for 20 minutes, or you go on a breath journey with breath holds, with contraction for 20 minutes. Your resting heart rate is lower in the second case. So again, this is an incredible prep work for meditation, but I struggle with meditation, and I believe most people really struggle with it. And I find that breath work is easy, and it's much easier because you do something. You just play the track, you breathe, just do what you're told, and you get there. And that's what's fantastic about it. It's call it meditation for dummies, because doing nothing is the hardest thing you can do.
That's very, very profound. And I completely agree with you on the topic of plant medicine and breath work. I mean, everyone is free to, you know, go on their own journey and experiment and find out for themselves. But for me, I found that breath work is such a more sustainable way to, you know, practice and access these, you know, higher levels of consciousness. Whereas if you do some plant medicine, a lot of times you need to set aside 4, 6, maybe 12 hours, and you can't just do it at your home. You need to ideally be in a, you know, maybe travel abroad or maybe go into a different place. So that involves a lot of time, energy, and logistics. And maybe there's a time and place for plant medicine as well. But I found that, you know, like you pointed out, when you use it properly, you are able to work with your aura, your chakras, and really bring that Kundalini energy up. And that's when you really enjoy that bliss state. And I think that's why Wim Hof says getting high on your own supply. You're using your own supply in order to experience these deep states of bliss. Now, I also want to touch on the cold, because that's something that I feel you and me am passionate about as well. So what drew you to the cold? Have you always been a fan of the cold, or, you know, cold exposure? So, or?
Man, the cold is incredible. Cold, I really invite everyone to, because we have so much conditioning around, you know, if you go outside, you're going to get a cold, put your hat on, that we have really an adverse reaction to it. But there is so much power in embracing discomfort in a conscious way. Like, you know, it's not a day where I open the ice bath and that I don't think, my God, I want to run away. I don't want to do it. No one wants to do it. It's your body is telling you you're going to die. And when you get in, you feel you're going to die. And having a conscious near-death experience and having the ability to really be comfortably uncomfortable is such a powerful resource to have in life. So for me, it's all about creating habits. in at a cellular level, so that when I am facing uncomfortable situations, unwanted in my life, now I've trained myself at a cellular level. I know what to do. I'm able to remember. Oh, I know that feeling of wanting to escape or wanting to run away. I did it this morning. So you can reconnect to your breath. You know, you can actually, Stock Carney called it the wedge. It creates the space between the trigger, the stimuli, and the response. And often this is what we need. We just need space so that we can respond rather than react. And I find, and there are not many tools that can help you do that, that the ice trains you for that. And when you are trained and at something, you can become good at it. And it's all about building habits. Habits. 70% of what you do every day is a habit. You sleep in the same side of the bed. You do the same things. You are taking the same chair when you're, etc., etc. We are habitual animals. So life, you should train as well. And being not comfortable, you should train as well, because life is not always comfortable. And it's really not about having a relaxed life. It's about being able to respond to uncomfortable moments in a relaxed way. And that's what HRV, heart rate variability, is all about. So improving your heart rate variability through breathing techniques, through ice exposure, is now known as a key marker to health and a key marker to longevity. And the science is really catching up on that. So it's important to have. But it doesn't have to be ice baths. It's about witnessing moments where you have to do something you don't want to do. I play with nails. I like the physical aspect of it. Putting your feet on nails or laying your back on nails, like sadhus in India. Or it can be writing the book you don't want to write. It can be something doing your accounting. But having those moments where you are going out of your comfort zone, where you're witnessing, oh my God, I really don't want to do that, and playing with it, is a really wonderful practice. And once you do that, you grow up, you get to the next level of yourself. Every time you pass the discomfort, you go beyond, you get to reveal yourself to yourself. And that's what the ice really, really does. Also, the ice is an incredible way to reveal and heal traumas, because it is really the cycle of trauma that goes on when you are in an ice bath. You get in, oh my God, so you want to run away. So flight and flight is activated, like is happening when you are experiencing a trauma. So that would be the first layer. And then after that, you freeze. You come to that space, or, oh my God, I cannot run away. I cannot fight. I freeze. And that's when trauma happens in the mind. It's where you are disconnecting, where disassociating. You're no longer in your body. And when you come out of the ice bath, if you stay long enough, you will experience what's called the after drop, where your body temperature is still dropping when you come out, and you will start shivering in an uncontrollable way. And this is the way the body heats itself. What happens with animals in nature when they are experiencing trauma? Two birds are fighting, they move away from each other, and they start shaking. Your dog, you play with him for a bit, he starts shaking. So naturally, animals release trauma through the body, and then they are okay. The zebra chased by the lion, he's about to die. Sometimes he escapes, he shakes, and then he eats. Humans, we don't do that. So we're not hungry when we have something traumatic happening. We cannot sleep. We have constipated. We don't want to make love. You know, all our functions are closed because we're experiencing trauma and we're not able to release it. So we know it unconsciously. That's why we go to Zumba. We go to club and get drunk on Saturday night. So we know somehow intuitively that releasing through the body is the way to go. And an ice bath and a release through the shiver after is kind of getting the body to relieve the cycle of trauma. And now I'm educating my body to release the trauma, so that now whenever I'm experiencing a traumatic experience, again, I've experienced that at a memory of my body, and I'm able to maybe add a little shake and literally be able to do it when you're experiencing it, rather than, you know, 20 years later. So the ice is an incredible teacher. And the best part, you don't have to do anything. Just get in the ice. Your mind is not involved. You know, it's hard to sit down and meditate. You have to convince yourself to do it. breath also, you have to sit down and it requires willpower. I mean, once you are able to get in the ice, get out of the way, get out of your own way. And it just works. And that's what's absolutely magical. It just works.
That is amazing. I love everything that you shared. And in fact, I think Wim Hof says something along the lines of, you can live life in two ways. Either, you know, you wait for discomfort and pain to come towards you, which it will. It happens to everyone. Or you can go towards the discomfort, you know, and the pain and confront it, like what people do when they do a cold dip, or maybe they go into the ocean, or maybe they have a cold shower. Like, I have a cold shower, you know, every morning, and I've been doing this for years. And whenever I get an opportunity here in Vancouver, I go for a, you know, cold dip in the ocean. And right now it's pretty cold because it's winter time here. And it's fascinating. And if you look at people who study habits, they say that usually to build a habit long-term, there has to be some reward at the end of it, right? And I feel that there's definitely a reward, because when you come out of the, you know, cold shower or, you know, cold dip, firstly, I guess on a philosophical level, you have won the war, or you have won the battle, you have come, you know, you've succeeded. But the other thing also is, like, you just feel so much vibrant, so much energy. You feel like, you know, you have a lot of electricity pulsing through you. And that sometimes is addictive. And that's a good addiction, I feel. But that is something that I feel is very beneficial. And like you pointed out, when you are in the water, either the cold will, you know, make you have a reactive type of breathing, or you can proactively breathe in a certain way that allows you maybe to generate inner fire, inner heat, and, you know, enjoy the experience and then come out, but not be too attached to it also. There's so many things to learn from being in the cold. Do you find for like maybe like a morning shower or cold shower, is there an optimum amount of time that you can spend in order to reap the benefits? Is there a cutoff point? I know you like to encourage people to experiment for themselves and find out, you know, is there a, like, you know, 3 minutes and then you're good and you can come out? Or
thank you. When you get in the ice, to go back to what you said before, you release endocannabinoid. So you get high on your own supply, literally. So it is why you said it's slightly addictive, you feel euphoric. Yeah, you release those hormones. You release endorphin, adrenaline, norepinephrine. So you are getting the hormones that lead to it. So and euphoria follows dysphoria. You know, when you have a stressful moment in your life and then it comes to an end, then you appreciate, you know, you have a deadline, you're stressed, what am I going to do? And then it's over. Oh my God, I feel so good and so happy and I can celebrate. And so when you take an ice bath, this is what's happening. When you do breath work with breath holds and then you relax, as we mentioned, and you do nothing, you are also producing those hormones. So it's important to not skip the last part, because you've experienced dysphoria, harvest it, shavasana, relaxing after, meditating after an ice bath, meditating. So this is where you really get the cash on the euphoria on a hormonal level. There is science on your question on what's the optimal time. There are two things here. Optimal time from a physiological perspective, and then there is the mind over matter. So from a physiological benefits, there was no proof that taking, I think it was more than 1 minute, had you have all the, because you have, when you have, we do 1 minute, you have the stress and you get over it. And I think that's the only thing. You stay in the ice until you don't need to get out. If you want to get out of the shower, you stay. And when you are okay, then you can go. And this way, you know, it's a personal answer rather than an amount of time. It's really for all of us to realize that, have I learned something? Can I be comfortably uncomfortable? That's what you want to learn from that experience. If you do it with a focus on the goal, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 1 hour, 1 minute, it doesn't matter. You're missing the point. The point, you're not going anywhere. It's enjoy the journey. So let go of time when you breathe, let go of time when you do a breath hold, let go of time when you take a shower, because if you are focused on, I'm going to hold my breath for 1 minute, it's good to train at the beginning, but it's missing the point. You want presence when you do your breath hold. That's what you want to get to. And you, for that, you need to let go of the outcome. and to be just present is, oh my God. And if someone is fully present and has, and they hold their breath for 30 seconds, that's great. It doesn't have to be a long breath hold. And someone who's done 4 minutes, but they are really just happy to write down in their book that it's 4 minutes, and what they get out of it is that they can hold their breath long, they're missing the point. Same with the eyes. Let's let go of outcomes. I think it's, and it can at the beginning to help you get into building habits. But yeah, it's what I like to recommend is if you can to not artificially heat up the body. And that's a bit of a tricky one at times. And that really has to be said if you're in a safe environment. Of course, if you're in nature, you need to have, you know, a hot drink, warm clothes, and really do all these practices progressively. You know, there is nothing that needs to be done in a violent way. You know, stay in the feminine in all you do. But learning to be okay, not to be okay, is an important part. When you can get out of the ice bath, and again, if you're in a safe environment, feel, oh my God, I'm not okay right now. My body temperature is still dropping. I'm not safe in my body anymore. And be okay with that. That's really powerful. And at the moment you will say, you know what? If I can swear here, fuck that. And you know, get into the sauna, you heat up the body, says, and if you are able to serve that edge to be in that point where, you know what? I can trust my body. My body is going to heat up. My body is going to take care of himself. And you just meditate and you stay with it and you allow the body to have the space. Then you know what? When the doctor is going to call you and says, you've got cancer, when someone is going to tell you, say, hey, this person in your life died, then all of a sudden you will experience not being okay. And if you're not training yourself at any point in your life to be okay, not being okay, well, then you're in for a ride, because life is not preparing us to not be okay. Our parents are protecting us from experiencing any emotions. Don't cry. Come on, let's go do something fun. Don't be sad. You know, we're conditioned not to experience our emotions. So when it comes in an overwhelming way, and if you're not training ourselves to deal with it, then it's a pretty nasty place to be. So there is a lot that can be said about what we can learn from those practices, about how we are training at life. We train at being humans. We're not being educated to be humans. We don't know anything about our bodies. We don't know how to deal with emotions. We don't know how to parent our kids. We don't know how to be partners. There is nothing that we are being taught that is actually useful for life. We are being trained to be good little soldiers to fit into some kind of society which has rules and its functions, because we are so many people on this planet that if we were all honoring ourselves, well, that would be a complicated place to manage. And people like to control other people. And we are not taught to be happy. We're not taught to be healthy. We're not taught how to eat, what to eat, etc., etc. And those practices are absolutely life-transforming, because they are essential living practices. There's nothing rocket science. And everything we share, every time people say, yeah, that's common sense. Yeah, that's common sense. There is nothing that you can really argue, because your body knows it's just truth. It's common sense and it's truth. And that's what's wonderful about it. And I invite people, when they receive some kind of knowledge and information, to just check in with the body. How do I receive it? And when you do that, then all of a sudden you realize that a lot of things that you receive from teachers and parents and society doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. And for that, you need to be able to tap into that inner truth.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing all of this, Alex. I'm sure our listeners are able to take in and even relate to a lot of what you shared about the cold, about breathwork, about life overall. Since we are in a new year, 2022, is there something that you're excited about this year, about, you know, your business, your practice, something that you'd like to share?
Thank you, brother. I really believe in the power of visualization. I've shared it before. You create the life you want to live. My personality creates my personal reality. I'm really believing in that. And my vibration is something I can control, and that can have an impact. So, you know, for me, this year is really about doing less. And that's what I've shared. It's like, I think we realize that there is too much of everything in this world. And now we need to able to come to a point where, okay, we have enough. And can I be happy with what is there and not chase more and more and more? Because so for me, it's really a year of appreciation, of humbleness, of enjoying what I have, my connections, my kids, my space, my nature, and just being happy and not chasing. So from a more practical perspective, I also want to make my the teaching more available. So I'm going to record some online courses that will be affordable, because I really want people to have access to them. I do facilitator training twice a year. Next one is in April. It's online and offline, so people can join from all over the world. It's a 6-month program. We really go deep, 3 weeks intensive, and then 6 months all together. I do a free session once a month, because I really want people to experience all that, even if for everyone. So there is a free session once a month. And I do short 2 days workshops and trainings for people who really want to understand their bodies, how to hack it. So yeah, that's my current offering. I have all of this on a Linktree, Breathing Cold, Instagram, Breathing Cold Bali, my website, Breathing Cold Bali. I'm easy to talk to. I'm easy to reach out. I'm always available for people. I love connecting. So yeah, but thank you for asking.
That is awesome. And Action Tribe and people who are listening to this episode right now, make sure that you follow both of our handles, Breathing Cold Bali, as well as My Seven Chakras. Make sure you follow us. And also, if you are watching the stream, make sure you take a screenshot and you can share it and tag both of us so that we can share this conversation further. Alex, thank you so much for appearing on our show. Really enjoyed learning from you and from your experiences and what you found so far on your journey. For somebody who wants to learn more about you, any more advice or guidance?
I did a lot of podcast interviews. So again, if they've managed to, through my Instagram, they find my Linktree. There's tons of content out there. I also share about my teachers and mentors very transparently. I have a WhatsApp group where I share much more openly, and Telegram group. So I also share there things that are much more relaxed way, less controlled way. So yeah, there are many ways to connect with me in many ways. And so yeah. Just reach out, Breathing Cold Bali, in one form or another. Happily support you guys. And it is a time when we need to support each other, when we need to give. So I'm really, really here to support others in any form I can. So yeah, let's care for each other.
That is awesome. And, you know, for me, one of my intentions this year is to convert my podcast, which I'm doing like so, into more of an adventure cast where I, you know, actually travel to meet my guest. We do some breath work, we do some cold exposure, we do something else. And then we have our podcast so that it's very experiential and we're able to have that shared experience. So I'm just setting the intention that I'll be sometime in the future be able to have another follow-up podcast with you, hopefully in person. But once again, thank you for appearing on our show, talking to all of our listeners about breathwork and so many other topics, and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Let's take 3 breaths to close, brother. Everyone, inhale. And through the mouth, exhale. And again, inhale. And let it go. And one last time, inhale. And out. Have a good breath, everyone.
See you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at mysevenchakras.com. That is mysevenchakras.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.